If you don't have a reason, a foundation as to like why you want to do this, it's just not going to be effective. If you know the reason you're doing something and you see your future and you can say, okay, this is why I'm doing this. I need to get here. And you have a clear vision, it makes it more valuable.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hello, 18 Summers Tribe. We're here this morning with Jessica Galdera, wife of Joel, who we interviewed previously.
Recent interview, which went well, yes. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And if no one's listened to our previous podcast with Joel, please go back and do that, because this was definitely a great one. Great
episode, yes.
And what's funny is he offered to be on this one too. And we said, no, it's okay. We'll just talk to Jessica.
He's a talker.
What are you trying to say? That we talk too much, us guys?
That we would like to focus on Jessica. And I have a feeling that he might show up and be like, well, just sometimes
be like me.
Sometimes you're a bit of an umbrella. You don't need to be, but you know.
I like to talk. Joel and I get along very well.
So. I bet. He has some great stories though. So
Oh my gosh. His stories with his mother on the boat crossing. Yeah. We've talked to our kids about that. So, and I know you have your own incredible stories. So we want to definitely hear that today.
Jessica, and being your own amazing, wonderful, strong self. Wow, 16, you were diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, and that was a complete fluke. We had a school trip that we were supposed to go to, and we needed a history and physical to be able to go on this trip. It's Busch Gardens. For those who are not Floridians, it's an amusement park, super fun park with a lot of roller coasters and all that. So we needed all this permissions to get to this park. I was feeling fine, and I was ready. I made my appointment with the doctor to get my physical. And as he's assessing my neck, he kind of felt something and you're very young. I'm sure it's nothing, but I feel a little something there. And 2 years prior, my aunt had thyroid cancer.
Oh,
and
wow.
Our pediatrician knows all our family very, very well. So he said, I know this probably has nothing to do, but just the fact that your aunt had it 2 years ago, let's just get it checked out. I mean, I'm not going to approve it until we do this, a quick little check. I'm like, okay, no problem. My mom was in complete panic mode. And my mom was like, today, we're having the appointment today. So he made some calls. From there, I went straight to the doctor's office. The endocrinologist felt and he said, absolutely, there's something there. Wow. Let's do an ultrasound. So right there, they did the ultrasound. He said, I see it. There's like a little mass. Let's measure it. I want you to come back tomorrow for a biopsy. So they did all that. I came back the next day. Horrifying experience. Seven needles as your neck is all extended. They have to draw fluid out. At 16, I was at any age, but more
and
so 16.
Wanted to go on a field trip.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go ride some roller coasters. That's all.
Wow.
And a week later, sure enough, he calls and he said, I need to see you. And we got into the doctor's office and he said, it's cancer. It was, a complete fluke. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. That is a parent's worst nightmare for sure.
That's my gosh.
A 16-year-old who, it's never fair at any age, but at that age, we're all we believe we're bulletproof. What was your first reaction? Because there's a lot of parents that have their teens listen to some of like, how did you handle that?
Well, I can tell you, it was a lot of a blur. I remember sitting on the table and my mom had actually called the day before and asked the doctor, if it's bad, let me break it down to her like slowly, just let me know. And he said, just come to the office tomorrow. So she thought, well, if it was bad, then he would have told me. So we went in super happy, very positive, like it was not going to be any bad news. And when he walked in and said the news, I remember where I was sitting. I remember my mom and I remember her screaming, just screaming at the top of her voice. And I just remember looking down and just a nurse had to come in and take me out of the room. The doctor had to sit with my mom and like try to console her. And it was just a blur. Like I didn't even understand what was really going on. I sat in the other room and she was just trying to calm me down, but I wasn't even crying. I think I was just in shock. I heard cancer, and I think at any age, you hear that word and you think automatically you're dying. There's no like, oh, I'm going to go through it. It's just this doomsday feeling. It was very, very like an outer body experience. I don't even think I cried that day. I couldn't even process it. It was weird. Yeah.
Imagine, do you still have moments of processing that even now?
No, I don't. It's been so long. Actually, when I first got pregnant, they wanted to take care of me like as if I was high risk. because hormones can fuel cancers and things like that. So they were checking me constantly. I had maybe a zillion ultrasounds. I kept joking that my kids are going to come out with like arms coming out of their heads.
Oh, yeah.
From all the radiation I got. And it was all fine. It's never been an issue since I had surgery ever. And then when I was going to have my third child, because I have four, when I was going to have my third, the doctor said, you know, it's been a while since we've done like a full check. Let's just do a body scan just to make sure we're good to go. And then lo and behold, something lights up in my neck. And it was like the brakes were put on and, okay, wait, what's going on? What had happened was apparently because I was 16, they didn't want to be very aggressive with the treatment. They just did the surgery and that was it. But protocol is you do the surgery and then you do a radioactive iodine to zap whatever is left over to make sure there is nothing coming back. Their fear was that I was not going to be able to have kids and it was just going to be this mountain of problems. So they said, let's do the surgery and we'll just watch you. So I never got the full experience until that point. The doctor's like, look, I'm sure this is not new. I'm sure this is from back in the surgery days. I don't think this is something new that's lighting up in there, but let's do the radioactive iodine now. So here I was with two kids and I had to be away from them for like 4 days. I was not allowed to be in the same house. They even told me wherever you go, flush the toilet 3 times because the radiation will sit there.
Wow.
Crazy. They told me you can't touch. I said, can I at least go to the house when they're not there and prepare their clothes and their lunch and stuff for school? They said, absolutely not. It'll all like leach onto their food and their clothes. So I was radioactive. I could not be around anyone. So I had to be in, luckily we have an amazing neighbor who used his house as a second home and wasn't using it for the summer. And he said, use my house, stay there. So I was able to see my kids 3 houses down and just wave for 3 days or 4 days. We did that. We did the scan again after the radioactive iodine and it wasn't enough. We had to do it again. They said the dose was too low. So I had to do all of that over again. And then it was clean. After that, everything looked great. And he said, okay, now if anything were to ever pop up again, we know it's new. It's not this, well, I'm sure it's this. I'm sure. We know it's a brand new cancer. And since then, it's been quiet and clear. So it's never been festering in my mind. I think I dealt with it back then. And knowing that I had that treatment and that I saw that it was all clear, I think I made peace with it.
That makes sense.
How did this experience shape you? I mean, it shaped you once and then maybe it even did a second time. What changed for you?
Well, funny enough, when I was in high school, my whole thing was to become a teacher. My after school job was an after school care teacher. I tutored on the side and everything was teaching related. Once this happened, that all changed for me. Immediately, I wanted to go into the health system. I loved everything that I saw, that I felt when I was in the hospital. The nurses were amazing. So, so compassionate, so just warm and welcoming, positive. And I thought, I want to do that for someone. I want to be that person for someone. So I got into nursing and I'm a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for many years and I stopped working the day-to-day nursing when I had my daughter, who's my third. And I've been a stay-at-home mom since then, but I have my license. I work very hard for that license, so I don't give it up. I do all my continuing education credits to keep that active. But yeah, it completely changed my trajectory.
So you think that getting sick at 16 led to the nursing path?
100%.
The old saying.
100%.
Sometimes your greatest gift is next to the biggest wound, I think it goes. Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
Were your parents first generation American too? Joel had that incredible story. I wasn't sure because him and I spoke. I didn't remember if your parents were as well.
So my mom and dad both were born in Cuba. My mom left when she was 2 and my dad left when he was 12. So my mom really doesn't remember anything about Cuba. This is her country. Even my grandmother, who spent a good chunk of her life in Cuba, you know, was raised there. She's been here so long already. When I ask her things about Cuba, she kind of suppresses it. She says, you know, this is my country. That's not my country. A lot of stuff happened, as you know, back the Castro era. So she kind of puts that away. So my family moved here and this is where we are.
Do you feel like any of that's just in your blood from generational?
Oh, yeah. It's funny. I know I do, even though I fight it. I know I have an accent. I live in Miami. I have the Miami accent. And I'm probably the most Cuban person you know in Miami, although I've never visited Cuba. Our kids are very Cuban. We eat Cuban food. We speak Spanish at home only. It's in our blood. It's who we are.
And the reason I ask that again is that gift next to the wound. I mean, the stories of perseverance that Joel told us, and now to hear that the way you handled it at 16, I mean, I don't know how I would have handled it at 16, honestly. I just don't know if I would have been emotionally shaped to persevere. So I give a lot of credit. And that's where it always fascinates me, where people can have that kind of resilience. And sometimes it's because they didn't have it easy, and it created a real strength within them.
Well, I can tell you, my childhood was great. I have no complaints, although my parents divorced when I was 2. And that was pretty traumatic, not at 2 years old, because I didn't know any better. But as I was growing up, the relationship between my mom and my dad was atrocious. And I was always thrown in the middle of that. And tell your dad this, and you tell your mother this. And I was always thrown in the middle of that mess. And I think it kind of just made me create a shell. Like, I couldn't let all that poison seep through, because it was nonstop, very vile, like a lot of hatred, just bad energy. Funny story, they're great friends now, and they text each other and they send each other memes, and it's all great.
You're like, thanks a lot, jerks.
Yeah, seriously. So, I mean, I think there's been some coding going on that kind of led to that. So.
Wow. And I had a similar situation that my parents divorced when I was really young, in a toxic environment. But I find that peacemaker is so deeply ingrained in me. Like that shield that you spoke of, it was almost like this peacemaker shield. And so often I do feel like it still serves me well, even though it's a trauma response, you know? And I think this really leads into your book and really all that you stand for right now. It's My Turn, and to put yourself first, because this shield of empathy and peacemaking tends to leave us last, doesn't it?
Yes, 100%. And I think as women, this is our default. We automatically do this to ourselves. We put everyone first. We put ourselves last. Our kids come first, our husbands, our jobs, our careers, and then we're kind of left in the back burner. There's always something more important to do. So I kind of wrote this, I think it was twofold. For me, because I always put myself last, I am the first one up, the last one down, the last one to eat. It's just how I've always been. So I think I wrote it for me to kind of put me in line. And I also wrote it for women, because I know so many women who do this and who want to do so many different things, but don't, because, well, I have to do this for the kids and I have to do that. And you just keep falling behind and you're not reaching your full potential.
Yeah. And I would say that, again, I can say this personally, to self-deprecate a little bit, it's probably even harder when your husband is a very, very focused, go-get-em entrepreneur. Because again, Joel and I got along great, and there's a lot of similarities to that perseverance and that drive and that wanting of better for everyone. But that can put a lot of pressure on the equal partner.
Absolutely, 100%. It's so much better now. But in the beginning, it wasn't very easy being married to Joel, who, like you said, is go-getter, fire, just go, 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 let's do this, let's do that. It was just very overwhelming. I think he got the ball in motion for me, because he went to a seminar where the gentleman speaking said that he went through all this personal development, growing constantly, learning nonstop. And then he came home to his wife and they had no connection, because she just stayed stagnant. And he wanted to share all these things with her, and she just didn't know what he was talking about. Like, she wasn't at that level anymore. His inner circle had changed, had evolved, and hers had stayed the same. And then now they just did not connect. And his fear, Joel's fear, was just that he was learning and growing, going to all these events, and I was staying home with the kids, taking care of the kids and doing PTA stuff, but not evolving. So we had a really deep conversation about that. And we made it a priority to make sure that we don't leave each other behind. We are together on this journey, this personal development journey, which is where all this came out.
Yeah, that's super powerful. Yeah. And Jessica, do you feel, as he's bringing you into that personal development, which is amazing and wonderful, and it's where that's the portion Jim brought to me at a deeper level. I was very into spiritual practices and parenting practices and other things when we met, education, but not so much the personal development and learning more about myself and deepening that relationship and some other skills. And it was so exciting and informational. Then there's a point in which I wanted to share those things in which mattered deeply to me and that I felt were part of my growing that he needed to come along for too. How did you navigate being with a big personality that had a well of knowledge that you wanted to be part of, and then also bring him into your world. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
To it, in both directions.
It was so easy. It was so easy. Joel is so like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like accepting of all experiences. He's up for anything. He likes to see opportunities in everything. So, and we have very good communication. That is one thing. When we got married, we had that front and center. We need to be transparent. We need to be clear. And whenever we are not feeling something, we need to say it and address it. We don't want things festering. So anytime I want to try something, anytime I have an idea, we talk about it. And immediately he's like, all right, let's do it. Let's try. He's go, go, go. So yeah, you want to try it? Let's go. Let's try it. Like, you know? So that part is very easy. Just getting those two worlds together, at least in my experience with Joel, was piece of cake.
Hey there, friends. Let's talk about what really matters in life. Money, freedom, and family. You know, the things that keep us going, but occasionally drive us crazy as well. Now imagine if you could have all three at once. Crazy, right? To think that? But it's possible with mine and Jamie's passive income playbook. It's the perfect blueprint for creating a build-to-rent passive income generating real estate portfolio that gives you and your family the freedom and passive income that you deserve. Now I'm not just talking about some small change here. We're talking about real tangible income that will allow you to never miss that family event, that ball game, or the vacation ever again. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, but investing in real estate is so hard and time consuming. But fear not, my friend. The Passive Income Playbook makes it easy and very straightforward, step by step. So why not visit jjplaybook.com today and schedule a conversation with one of our sales counselors and download your own copy. Trust me, it'll be the best investment you make this year. Besides, maybe you get that feeling that you're going to buy back your time and also create a legendary family life. Because let's be honest, what's better than financial freedom and quality family time? Not much, except maybe that peace of mind that comes when you know you'll never have to choose between work and family again. So go ahead, make the investment and prioritize what truly matters in life. Your family will thank you. One more time, go ahead and visit jjplaybook.com.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I give Jim big props because I'd say 95% of the time for him too. Every now and then we'll have a moment where he'll go, I didn't even believe in this stuff before I met you. What are you like? Stop. I didn't even know this existed before I met you. And that's a moment in which I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah. But well, it's funny. We're doing goals, like family goals, and we're coming up with these things. And I just woke up one day and I said, you know what? I want to visit every single national park in the United States. And he's like, does this mean that I'm coming with you? I'm like, absolutely. You're absolutely coming with me to teach him. He's like, it's not part of my goals, but okay, we're doing it. I'm like, yes, we're doing it. So it's been great.
Which one's your favorite?
I haven't even started. I literally just
We're going to talk offline then, because one of our things was we're a partner on building an RV resort here in North Florida.
Nice.
We got the fun job of getting in our own RV and driving out west, driving all the way north into Canada to look at other RV resorts and bring back ideas. And we did 2 6-week adventures. And
wow.
Let me tell you, it's look, we are not hardcore campers. But
neither are we.
Stop at a hotel or an RV
or Airbnb.
An Airbnb. But to be able to see the parks with our kids, and now the two oldest boys are almost 21 and almost 19, It's like, wow, like the adventure of being in those parks.
I'm so excited. We're leaving this week to North Carolina, and on the way up in South Carolina, my 16-year-old, he's super excited about doing this. Immediately, he's like, well, I'm going, right? Like, I'm going to be a part of this. I'm like, yes, absolutely. So he's been looking up stuff and he said, okay, on the way to North Carolina, literally 15 minutes, like off the highway, there's going to be a park. Can we stop? And I said, all right, let's do it. Yeah. We're going to hit our first one. I mean, being in Florida, we've been to the Everglades and we've been, you know, to those. But even that, he said, my son is super excited. He said, we need to start over. We need to go visit the Everglades. We've gone to the Everglades 90 times at least. And he said, we're going to start over, make it official. We're going to take pictures. We're going to record everything. I said, okay, let's do it. So our first real one will be next week when we go to North Carolina.
Oh, fun. And there's some beautiful mountains in there. But there's Montana, Wyoming, and I'd say a little over the border, but Nova Scotia was unbelievable.
Wyoming was way up there, like in the top two.
Yes. And our one thing is Yellowstone's great, but it's crowded. It's the Grand Tetons, which is just south of there. That's where we got back. We did private eco tours to see grizzly bears just with us and the kids. And yeah. So you're going to have a great time. We're excited for you.
Thank you.
You know, that would have never happened. I think, Jamie, you were more the push on that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I always feel like I have something to prove. I don't so much anymore because it's been my turn for a moment now. So, but yeah, I think there was at some point where we finished out the school year, and that day when school ended, we got into an RV and drove. But I had something to prove, I think. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm taking this thing and I'm out of here.
More than to prove, like, I'm going to do something now. I guess there was a little to prove, but I think you were seizing the moment.
Oh, yeah. But I think that was what I was proving. I was like, I've got this. I've made a plan. I've got my children. I'm proving that they're first. I don't know. It was like a lot of so much, just like for you to be bold enough to say, this is what I want.
Well, and with this, it's my turn. Like, everyone now listening is going, oh, I love this. I need this. My entrepreneur husband's half crazy. I want to make sure I do this for me and everyone will be better off. Like, what is a first step? I know there's probably...
Yeah, how do you put yourself first?
How do you start to at least do that? At least a starting point.
So I would say the first thing is just to find out your purpose. Why do you want to get this book? Why are you here? Why do you want to grow your personal development? What is your reason? So start with that. I think that's just kind of the foundation. You need to know why you want to do this. You're just going to do a challenge to do a challenge. It's no big deal. You can do many different challenges. But if you don't have a reason, a foundation as to like why you want to do this, I think it's just not going to be effective or eventful. It's just going to be another challenge. It's just something else, another book. But I think if you know the reason you're doing something and you see your future and you can say, okay, this is why I'm doing this. I need to get here. And you have a clear vision, then I think it's just, it makes it more valuable.
That's so good. Do you have an exercise like that in your book of helping people identify?
Yep. Maybe so. We have 31 days. So day one is just that, finding your purpose. Now, I don't expect anyone to find their purpose for living on day one, but it's to start that process. And then hopefully by day 31, you can start chipping away and say, okay, I'm narrowing things down. I know what I need to do. I know why I want to do it. Now it's time to put in the work.
And what would you say, I guess this could be both of you, but what would you say is the most difficult thing of getting started on this path? Is it the old reflexes, the guilt? Oh, I'm being selfish to everyone. Like,
what? 100%. That's what it is. I think it's the guilt. I don't know if it happens to men as it happens to women. I think women are more guilty of this, but it's totally the guilt. Even writing the book, I felt guilty taking away time from the kids to sit down and get this done. I thought like, well, I could be doing something with the kids. I could be cooking right now. I could be taking them to the park. I mean, it's a battle. It really is. And even, like I said, I think I wrote this more for me, because I deal with a lot of that guilt of dedicating time to myself, the guilt of just not being mom 24/7 or wife, because Joel is my other child. So I have
never heard that before.
He's my fifth, and he requires a lot of attention. And then I have 4 or 5 people pulling at me for attention. And I'm like, no, everybody, this is for me. That's kind of hard to sometimes swallow sometimes, but sure. You nailed it. I think the guilt is the hardest part.
And it's hard too, like, for me, we just had this conversation yesterday, because in the last week, we've been with 2 little extra little ones were added into our life. We found
semi-foster care.
We found. So we were having a talk yesterday about Jim's like, I really want to see you be able to lean into your calling and your purpose. And the thing in which you said mattered so much to me when we got together was me being able to enjoy our children and play and create all these fun adventures and experiences that I'm not in the work as often.
Right.
And my biggest thing, and I could see this in you too, is being like, oh, but what's going to happen if I'm not there? Yeah. But don't you guys need me? And there's a part of me that wants to be needed. There's a part of me that really feels like, does everybody really have this? And I think that as strong women, we tend to feel like, oh, well, gosh, but I know that answer.
Right.
You know, instead of waiting for someone else to raise their hand, we're like, oh, well, I can do that very easily. That's my biggest trap, I think.
It's funny. That's one of the chapters in the book, is just that it's not going in to save everybody. It's letting people figure things out and just kind of stepping back and let them be independent, let them work through their issues. My son, who's 18, he was in military boarding school. He's in the Army now, but he was in military boarding school for a few years. He's just always loved that environment. He thrives in that environment. And I remember him calling me one day. We had just gotten back from break. So we dropped him off in Atlanta for after Christmas break. And he calls me, Mom, I don't have bed sheets. I'm like, buddy, I'm in Florida. I don't know what you want me to do. And he's like, well, can you call the school and have them bring it to my room? I'm like, no, I can't. I said, what do you think is the best step? Like the next step for you to do? He's like, well, tell my attack officer that I need sheets. Yeah, you tell your attack officer. So then he went, came back. He's like, well, he says he's busy right now. I'm like, what would you like me to do? Like, what do you think I should do? And he would just, well, I'm the one who should follow up. Yeah, Yeah, you're the one they said, well, I'm not sleeping on that bed. You are. I could have easily had called the school and been like, hey, my son is in room so-and-so. He doesn't have any sheets, but I can't swoop in and save the day every time. I'm doing him a disservice if I do that. It's hard because immediately I had my phone in my hand like, okay, I got this. I'm going to take care of it. But it doesn't help him any. So it's hard as a mom and not easy.
Oh, for sure. I think I always joke that in a serious note that women are more, I think, emotionally evolved, which means bring up deeper subjects and have conversation with them where it's way harder for us. But every strength has an attached weakness. So they are more emotionally involved. They also take bigger feelings on more. Like the families we've worked with, I'm like, wow, like mom guilt is a very real thing, especially for successful women. And it's like, it's such a cheat because it's like, oh, you're setting such a good example. Oh, you're doing things and you are there. And even when you are, I think it's a constant, I call it the negative little guy that gets on your shoulder and you got to tell him to shut up.
It can be like a double-edged sword for sure.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, and it was really funny yesterday as we were having this talk, I was told Jim, I was like, I feel like I'm better than ever. Like we've got meals. Somebody makes meals two nights a week. I make like fun leftover meals out of those two meals. And we've got a sitter that comes 4 days a week. And she also does laundry. I was like, gosh, like, I feel like I'm doing so good. And he's like, you are. If this was 5 years ago. He's like, but not with what we're doing right now. He's like, this has been amazing 5 years ago. He's like, I need you to step it up.
That is so funny.
Sweetly and encouragingly, but he's seriously, he's like, I want to give you credit. However, you should have been here 5 years ago and wait. So just the idea of how important it is, because he's an incredible driven man, but he's a very supportive husband. He's like, I don't want you to leave podcasting to go inside and fold laundry. I want you to leave podcasting, go work out, pick the kids up and have a picnic. You know, he's like, do things that feed you and that you want to do. You want to be with our children. You want to care for yourself and you want to make a difference. Do those things.
Yeah. Cause you can't pour from an empty cup. If you are running on fumes, if you are drawn to five different things, you're not showing up the way you should be to your children and to your family and to your husband. If you are just in 100 different things, there's no way that you can give everyone the attention that they need, including yourself. So you need to fill yourself, fill your cup, and then you're working on all cylinders and you're ready to go. And then you have plenty to give, but you can't just be on fumes all the time.
And Jessica, how has that been for you? And this is an important thing because Jamie has such a pride of work and is such a hard worker.
I love working.
And she is not a lazy person. And at first, years ago when we got together, I was like, will you please sit down? Just sit down for a minute. You know what I mean? I think it was that proving if I can do this, I've overcome things, I can do it. I've tried to encourage, and with lots of other families we've worked with, if you're getting to, like you said, that purpose or higher calling, sometimes, I'm not saying delegate out of family life, that call with your son, you don't want someone else taking that call, but you want to be there to teach. But how was it for you to let go of the $15 to $20 an hour work? Because I've said, we got to pull from somewhere for you to write your book, for you to go into that, to run that charity organization you're doing. How was it for you to let go of that $15 to $20?
It's going to be a weird answer because Joel had begged me forever to let it go. And we had two boys and our business was growing. When it finally grew enough, he said, now you can stay home. And I thought, no way, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not staying home. Like, yeah, nice try.
That's the thing you've said today.
Nice try. I'm not doing that. And then, you know, it wasn't until our accountant had a conversation with us and she said, it is worth it for you to stay home. Like financially, it is better for you, for taxes, for all this stuff, for you to stay home and help your husband on the business, then go out there and make this like side money that you're making with nurse. Because I wasn't working full-time at that time. I was working part-time, well, full-time, I guess, for nursing. It's 36 hours a week. So she's like, you're costing more in taxes than you're helping your husband. Help him grow the business. Stay home, help him grow the business. That way he doesn't have to hire extra people. You can be those people. And I thought, okay, fine. But like I said, I still have my license. I had that in the back pocket. I couldn't just cut it 100% because I, you know, it's hard. It's hard. I do not sit down. I don't think I have ADD, but I am go all the time. I know when I sat on the couch a couple months ago, I just sat there for a few minutes. My daughter came over and she said, are you feeling okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. She's like, I don't think I've ever seen you sit on the couch. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And then we have a housekeeper and she came over and she asked me, do you feel okay? And I thought, I can't sit for 5 minutes. Oh, it blew everyone away. Like, what? Are you okay? What's going on? I'm the same. I like to get things done. I like to work out. I like to fill my cup. I've been so good about that lately, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. So if you have the chance to do it, I recommend you do.
And what would you say to any moms out there? Because now, like, so cool to watch you and Jamie. You're both fit. You're both writing your own books. You're supporting pretty big businesses as well, and business ventures and financial endeavors. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you could have done that if you didn't start to let go some of the, like you said, the housekeeper thing. That's not a shameful thing. That's a prideful thing, I think, to evolve. Like, how do you help people get over that line? Because I think this is a really important thing we've talked about. How do you help women get over that blockage?
I think it's really hard. Like you said, Jamie, you had now the housekeeper and you have all these things now, and now you rather, well, Jim, you said you'd rather her be doing the podcast than folding laundry. That makes perfect sense. I mean, you kind of got to balance. It's very hard for women to turn it off and say, like, okay, I'm going to let go, take it over. Very difficult. But I think there has to be baby steps. Like, okay, I'll do this, but because of this. Oh, all right, we'll start here, but I'll let her come once a week. And you just kind of work your way up, as long as it's filled with meaningful things. If you're just going to have a housekeeper for you to lay on the couch, I think you're not going to feel it. It's not going to be worthwhile. But if you're giving up your folding and your grocery shopping and or whatever it is to be able to do a podcast or to be able to meet up with friends for coffee and hear what they're up to go travel, to any of these things that's more fulfilling, I think it'll be a little bit easier to let go.
Yeah.
I remember when we first got the housekeeper, that was also my cleaning day. Because I was like, oh, well, if I too clean and she's cleaning.
We all do that.
I don't want the cleaner to think I'm lazy. And just, you pay her.
We have the same conversation, Joel and I. He's like, why are you cleaning? She is cleaning today. I don't want her to think I'm
lazy. I tell you, we are all living the same life. It's just,
for sure.
To let go. And I think it's important, Jessica, the same way that you and I see ourselves in each other, I think another thing you talk a lot about is like finding your tribe. So you and I sat and had this conversation. It's like, oh, this is my girl. You know, we could definitely do this all day.
Yeah.
How important is it to have women that support you and pull you forward?
Well, I got to tell you, one of the chapters in the book is your circle, and it's to analyze everyone who is in your circle currently and see what they bring to the table. How valuable are they? Are they just wasting your time? Are they just there to have some coffee? And the conversations are very surface level. What are we dealing with? Who do you have that's really surrounding you? Because like the saying goes, you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. So if you want to level up, you can't hang out with people who are just going to drain you, right? And you need to have people that you look forward to meet, to hearing about, learning about. So this chapter, we do these check-in calls once a week. That was in the middle of the week. And I really didn't think it was going to be this really heavy chapter. Lo and behold, when I asked everyone to check in, what was the most difficult chapter this week? They all said the circle one. Wow. And I thought, really? And they said, you know, I've had my sister is part of my circle because she's my sister, but she's toxic. Like, I don't know why I have her in my circle. So I'm going to start reevaluating this. Another one was like, you know, I have these two friends. I'm with them 24/7. If I were to talk to them in one deep conversation, they would think I was the biggest like weirdo. Like, that's too much. Like, why are you talking about this? Forget about that. She said, I couldn't have deep conversations with these people. So now they're all analyzing like, wait a minute. I can't have some serious thought-provoking conversations with these people. Maybe they shouldn't be in my circle. Because things are going to come up. In our family, we've had some doozies come up and we've had to talk to people. If someone was just like, oh, forget about it. Forget that. No big deal. You can't, you're drowning. It's like, you're looking for help. Like, no, I need advice. I need some thought-provoking things. Help me. And those are the people you want in your circle to be like, okay, let's sit down. Let's talk. Let's figure this out. So I think having a circle, a tribe of women who are going to push you, who are going to make you really think and dig deep is just life-changing. It really is. It's a game changer.
That taking of inventory is not easy though. Yep. And that's both for successful women like you guys and men, because I can tell you two things that Jamie and I have shared, and you just shared them spot on. If I can't have a deeper conversation below the surface, I have no desire to have you in my inner circle. That is just so debilitating to me because that's not me. That's just not truly me. I want to go below the surface. I need to for my own true connection.
Absolutely.
And then the second thing Jamie and I learned years ago, I don't care. I mean, of course, there's the little jokes that come up. I have no desire to be around men that bitch about their wives all the time.
And,
like that.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. And Jamie had seen that, said, like, we're friends. We're pals. Right. We're adventure partners. Like,
I got uninvited to the mom meetups in our neighborhood.
Good. That's a good sign.
No, it was I was excommunicated because I love hanging out with my children and my husband. Like, they light me up.
Yeah.
And it was a few.
That was just hard for me.
Some people don't share that value. And I feel for them. I'd like to say we're very happily married. So why would I get around someone that's not all they do is complain about?
Well, that becomes like a cancer.
It does.
That toxicity just starts festering and it becomes a cancer. You need to cut that out. You can't be surrounded by people like that.
And sometimes, and we learn that it's better to have less interactions than to have those interactions.
Right.
So it might feel quiet and a little more lonely, but it's only then made space. I'm sure in the book you talk about that.
I now do.
There's space
just like that.
That go deeper and talk about healthy marriage and how to thrive it more.
Once you evolve as a person and you know what you want and you are committed to this personal growth journey, your circle starts to change. If it doesn't, then you're not doing it right. Because if you're changing, but you're keeping around the same people who are kind of holding you back, what good are you doing? You're not progressing. So as you go developing and changing, your circle is all going to change. And you're going to be surrounded by, hopefully, by winners, by people who you want to mimic and grow and learn with. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's just your circle is instrumental in your growth.
Well, Jess, where can we find your book? It's my turn.
You can find it on Amazon or you can find it on 31dailychallenges.com. You'll see my book there and Joel's. There's a woman and a men section and you just click and then you'll see it there.
So perfect. Thank you so much for sharing
Thank you guys so much.
Awesome.
Great conversation. We will have one with all four of us together because that would probably be pretty comical, but I'm glad you
got the wisdom. Elbow.
Yes. Well, shock collars on me.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I love it.
Well, so we love it. Please say hi and we hope to talk to you guys again soon. It was great having you on.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.